Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Welcome to New Horror Express. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and thank you for joining us for this second edition of New Horror Express's Guilty Pleasure series, which we're doing in conjunction with Bloodhound Picks hashtag Horror Not Fear campaign, a year-long campaign which seeks to deepen ties within the indie horror community, as well as giving our respective audiences extra fun content in these difficult times. The theme of this second episode of the series is Scream Knockoffs. In aid of this, we asked you, our audience, to vote on whether you wanted to talk about Valentine or Cherry Falls. And you voted for Cherry Falls, a slasher from 2000, which was directed by Aussie Jeffrey Wright, who's probably best known for his film Romper Stomper. Joining me to talk about the film, I have two great former guests in the form of Death of a Vlogger director Graham Hughes and Incredible Violence director G. Patrick Condon. Hi guys, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hey. Hi there.
Now, before we get into this episode, I should warn anybody listening that this discussion is going to be full of spoilers. So if you have not seen Cherry Falls and plan to watch it, switch off now. Or better yet, go watch the film and then come back and listen to us talk about it. Anyway, now on to our discussion. So first of all, I want to ask both of you, in turn, have you seen Cherry Falls before? Graham?
I hadn't seen it until yesterday because of this podcast.
Patrick?
Yeah, I'd never even heard of it. And I watched it a couple of times and yeah, I was pretty surprised, to say the least.
Okay, so that's interesting that you hadn't even heard of it. I think we can discuss that further because I think, you know, it definitely got a bigger release here. It was released in cinemas in UK and in the UK and the rest of Europe, whereas it went straight to cable in the States. It was on the USA network and was at the time the most expensive direct to cable movie ever made at $14 million.
Oh wow. That's a terrible boast.
It really is. I had quite a troubled production, which we can talk more about. My next question was going to be if you thought it was like better or worse having if you'd rewatched it, but neither of you knew you'd watched it, so that's we'll skip ahead.
Efficient, yeah.
So I was wondering if yep, I could just jump ahead. In because you were saying that it was over on this side of the world, it was not made for TV, but it ended up just being released on TV. The version I saw very much was like the violence and stuff was something you'd see on TV. Is there a version of this that is more violent, or did you guys get to see more gore and blood? You know,
it's largely it's not got that much gore or blood. I think the version of the film that was released a couple of years ago on Blu-ray by Scream Factory, I believe, is slightly more violent than the version that was put out on the USA Network in 2000. However, I think the uncut version, as far as we know, has been lost. There was a troubled production history. Apparently, the director had a contract that he needed to deliver an R-rated movie. He delivered a movie that was kept being threatened with a NC-17 over in the States. Apparently, it was submitted to the classification board like five times, and there was various cuts. So there is a more gory hardcore version of this somewhere, but it's not been released and nobody knows if it actually still exists.
We should get a campaign on the go. Let's get this uncut R-rated or X-rated version of Cherry Falls out. Might do the movie better.
So, yeah, apparently there is kind of, in the finale, there is a bunch more nudity in like what was originally shot, the original cut, and also it doesn't cut away as much during the murder. So there is more gore, but and the director, Jeffrey Wright, hasn't talked about it much since. So nobody really knows how much gory or how much more nudity or how much, you know, more X-rated it is.
Well, I wonder if, can we just start a jump all over the map, or did you want to go in sort of chronological order? Because I can imagine that the movie would never get a release if they if the end sort of sequence was any more gratuitous than what it was, you know, for what it is. Can I just say what it is?
Yeah, you can go. Yes. You can go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, so it's like it's a teen orgy, and you know, they shoot it as PG, I guess, or as TV friendly as possible. But I can imagine it if they went any further, especially over on this side of the world, the MPAA would never have allowed them to release it.
I mean, what age are these kids supposed to be? I
think high school, right? Like graduating 16, 17 sort of thing?
Yeah, 16, 17, I think they're supposed to be. I mean, obviously the actors and actresses are not that age.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
They are supposed to be.
But yeah, beyond that, yeah, and it's an interesting thing to have in an American slasher movie too, is I could see that being sort of just the end of the conversation for the ratings board on this side of the world.
Well, that's the other interesting thing. Like, apparently that was entirely the director's choice. The screenwriter, Ken Seldon, what he wrote in the screenplay was just like quite tame. Apparently they were all, the orgy took place under this kind of massive kind of white sheet, and you just saw kind of bodies moving underneath this white sheet kind of thing, you know, and it was all quite comical. And that was it. It was Jeffrey Wright, the director, who decided to do it more explicit. And obviously that got watered down throughout the various cuts that were submitted.
I think they threw the line quite well.
I was surprised.
Like, for me, it wasn't.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
I think it's such a great concept, but obviously, you know, if you start this concept, then it does sort of like lead to, you're going to have scenarios with teens having sex. And I think the way they handled it was like tasteful, I guess.
Yeah. And it's one of the cool things. Like, I mean, the movie is trash. I think it's like, it's not a good movie, but there are ideas in it that maybe handled differently could have been cool. Which is that this is a killer going through town and killing people who are virgins, as opposed to the traditional slasher trope of killing people who are having sex.
Yeah. It's a nice version.
Yeah. There does seem to be quite a lot of interest. It's funny that you say the film is trash, because like, of the kind of series and the kind of the series that I'm doing of guilty pleasure movies, this is one of the ones that actually really has its defenders. Like, it was certainly little seen in the States back when it was released in 2000, but it has grown a kind of cult following over the years. And in the kind of scale of the guilty pleasure movies that I'm looking at, that are like, some are totally terrible, some are just kind of not so good, this is probably slightly higher up the scale. And
yeah.
I actually wanted to ask you both that, I mean, I still see it as a guilty pleasure. I still think it's not a very good movie, but that has some interesting ideas. But I just wanted to ask both of you what you thought in those regards. Obviously, you thought you've been straight to the point, Patrick. What about you, Graham?
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I don't know if like my I don't know if I've just been watching a load of shite recently, but I thought this was a lot better than I expected it to be. And I don't even know if I would put it in a guilty pleasure category. It's like a sort of above mediocre film. Like, it's watchable. It's not like there weren't many parts that I laughed at it for being bad. There were like a handful of little parts, but I don't think it would sustain like a bad movie night. Like, it's just quite, like slightly above mediocre, maybe like a 6 out of 10 sort of film. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, there are little things that they do in the movie that looks like it's clumsy, like some logic stuff, or like switching night for day, or when you first meet, Brittany, the lead actress's father, Brittany Murphy's father, for the first time. It's like 11 o'clock at night, but he's still in full sheriff's uniform, inexplicably, you know? So there's little things like
and he's
that.
Hiding in her bedroom in the dark as well.
I mean, and the relationship between those two throughout the movie is just bizarre. It's so weird.
Yeah, I think like...
There's a moment... Sorry, go on.
Oh, no, I was just going to follow up on what you were saying there. I think... there is some weirdness to the movie. And, you know, obviously there's a scene between Michael Biehn's sheriff character and the Brittany Murphy's character, where he's teaching her some self-defense, which, spoilers, comes back again later. And there's like, there's such a strong incesty vibe to that scene.
Yes.
It's like,
when he lands, like he lands on top of her, and it's like there's a moment when it's like it looks like they're gonna kiss.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna bring up. And then, but that's not the only thing. Like, it seems like Brittany Murphy's character, for the first part of the movie, everybody that she runs into, including her own mother, Jay Moore, the teacher, like there's this weird kind of like sexual energy that's going on there that I don't think is a mistake. And I wonder if you guys caught on to that or felt that too.
Oh man, how can you miss it? It's like it's omnipresent. It like just seeps into every moment of the film. I think that's kind of cool though.
Yeah, I feel like it's not. It can't not be like, and it can't be an accidental thing. You know, like you say, there's such a strong sector, but and like all the characters are like weirdly. Sexual in the start of the film. Like there's the moment where the secretary comes into the principal's office, who we never see again, and like she says there's a phone call for him in the most kind of like seductive kind of like there's a phone call, you know, like it's like there's no reason for like what like because I was like, you know, to the point where you think like, oh, maybe that'll come back, maybe they're having an affair or something. Nope, it's just like sleazy secretary character.
Yeah
I noticed that too, and that was sort of like, again, like I don't know the reason behind it, like I guess like it's some sort of, I guess the movie is a satire in that sort of sense. It's like Scream, but I like it too. I found that it was like I thought that it was interesting. And when I say that the movie was trash, I find that unless you are kind of looking or interested in those kinds of moments, the movie is very much a boilerplate late 90s, early 2000s American slasher flick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In all of its ways. Like,
absolutely.
Very much a victim of its time as well. Like, I think some of the more laughable parts are that kind of. Early noughties. I've never been able to put my finger on quite what it is, but certainly like a lot of it is using technology, like new technology. It's like digital editing is like, you know, burgeoning at that point, and you just get these like ridiculous transitions and things like that everywhere, and it just is such like an all of its time thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, like in the first scene where they're, you know, it's the typical out on Lover's Lane sort of thing. They do this when the killer goes to kill the girl. They do this really weird strobing effect on her. Yeah. And to me, it was like, okay, we're trying to cover up like the fact that we can't show you any violence. But it was a really weird editing choice.
Yeah, they do that. I think it's very like, kind of late 90s, early 2000s kind of slow-mo thing.
Yeah. I literally think it's because it's like, you know, have it when you're a new editor, like literally you've just opened up editing software and you're like, oh, cool, a star wipe. Like, I think that was all like 2000, early 2000s films. They're like, oh, look, we've got this like strobing effect now. We don't have to send it to a lab or anything. We can just like whack this on here. Doesn't that look cool?
Yeah. There was a couple of times, like, again, I think to get around probably the violence, like when the second girl was getting killed, right as the stab is going in, they cut to her parents at the dinner table and the father's knocked over his wine. So there's like,
oh, yeah,
some things are happening in there where you're going like, okay, so like these guys know what they're doing. And obviously like he made Robert Stomper. So yeah, it's just, I don't know. It sort of feels like it's a movie that everybody, almost everybody kind of abandoned, like or studio interference. And so as a result, you don't really get a strong vision of what's going on. I think the only person that truly cared about that movie was Jay Moore, because he went for broke in that role for sure.
Oh, totally. Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, like, you're talking like, if we're going on the kind of strengths of the movie, like I would say those kind of three performances from Brittany Murphy, Michael Biehn, and Jay Moore are one of the strengths of the movie.
Oh yeah, Jay Moore definitely thought that this was going to be a big deal. Like, he really, like, I mean, he's running around and dragging it, and especially like at the end of the movie, it is really good. It was surprisingly good. Brittany Murphy, I think, like, I mean, there are times where it seems like she was, and maybe I'm just reading into it, there's times that it seems like she was maybe intoxicated or something on set. there's sometimes where she's a little slurry. And I'm mainly thinking about the scene where she's making her ex-boyfriend bite her toe. And she seems like she's just not with it. But, I mean, that's a complete guess on my part.
I mean, that just, like, looked like a choice to me that she was – I think that was her take of, like, sultry.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Like, yeah, I mean, like, as we've discussed, there is – throughout the movie, there is some weird scenes. And there's an air, we talked about the secretary thing, the self-defense scene. There's a weird sleepwalking scene where she just kind of murmurs, daddy, yeah, at the window.
What is that about?
I have no idea. I don't know why that scene exists. It plays no place in the narrative at all.
I watched this yesterday and I remember like seeing that scene and I was like, I need to clock that for later. That feels like a clue or something. And then it didn't cross my mind until literally this morning. I was like having breakfast and it just popped into my head. And I just remember her standing with her eyes shut going, daddy. And I was like, wait, what was that about? They never explained it.
No, and then it cuts to one of the most bizarre time transitions too, because her father goes to leave to go and investigate the first murder in Cherry Falls.
Yeah.
And then he pulls to the scene and it's daytime. So like, best case scenario, he was roaming around town for 4 or 5 hours before he got it just didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then, yes, and then we have the toe-biting scene, which is just bizarre. And, like, not just the toe-biting, but, like, the dialogue between her and her boyfriend, Kenny, where he's rabbiting on about, you know, you lose your spiritual virginity when you realize your parents are worse hypocrites than your friends. Like, just not a clue. I kind of see that she's rebelling against her parents and she's having a bit of a moment. But somebody wrote that. Which is interesting.
I mean, if you're talking about bad dialogue between two people that are about to have sex, the opening scene when the guy's talking about all these like weird alien metaphors.
That is a seduction technique. So
yeah. Oh my god. Like,
I really like,
I mean, I get the the motivation to, like, you know, you're writing this scene that we've seen a million times before, which is like two teens in a car and they're about to get murdered. So I admire the way that he took it to try and make it a bit different, but like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I don't see how it really comes back to mean anything or enters into any kind of like theme or idea. It's so strange.
It's just randomness.
I really like the Kenny Ascot character though. Her boyfriend, I thought that was kind of another breakaway from sort of the traditional trope of like asshole boyfriend. And he ends up being a pretty all right guy.
That. I wanted to talk about that as well though, because like, and I want to get your gauge on this. Your gauge on this, Graham, as well.
I thought that he starts off being, you know, the
just like, because I feel like he is two characters. He is the asshole boyfriend, and then he's like Mr. Sensitive Dude, you know, in the second half of the movie. Like, he feels like two characters.
Yeah, and it's in that toe-sucking scene that it seems like he's just not that he's changed for whatever reason. Like, he doesn't, I think he says something along the lines of like, if we're going to do this, I want it because you want it to be me, not because you want to piss off your parents or something like that. Which I think that the guy that we see at the beginning of the movie would be just like, I don't care why you want to get down. I'm into it. Let's do it. I'll suck your toes. No problem.
Because there's also a scene when she comes back from school after having been attacked by the killer that's just before the toe-sucking scene, that he's like, he professes his profound love for her and how like he couldn't go on if she wasn't in the world anymore, kind of thing. So what was your thoughts, Graham? How did you find that transition?
I thought this character was absolute scum. I hated him so much. He's so fucking manipulative for the first half of the film, and that whole he tries to break up with her, but gaslights her into making it her decision. Like, he's like, if you want this, and then he comes crawling back because there's like a massive sex party about to happen, and he doesn't want to miss his chance. And then that scene, the toe sucking scene. The only reason, in my opinion, that he changes his mind and doesn't want to have sex is because she takes the power away from him. She becomes the instigator, and that doesn't sit right with him. And that's why he like freaks out and doesn't want to do it anymore. And then for him to then be the hero all at the end, like he saves her life two or three times at the end. Just like, I fucking hated that.
Yes,
I agree with that. Yeah, no, I think he is a scumbag character for sure, and I totally get where you're coming from in terms of like he just feels that it's somehow wrong for the woman to be the sexual aggressor, so like that's why he backs off. I could see where you're coming from there.
And 9 times out of 10, that guy would be killed, you know, he'd be killed
during
the climax of the movie. Yeah,
and you know, to go, I mean, like there's some kind of just weird decisions in terms of like the character motivations, and like I say, like that character just feels very much like two characters. And I have to say, in terms of like dialogue, there's some of the dialogue is, it's not the ropiest kind of dialogue that I've seen in horror. A lot of it's kind of fine, mediocre, but some of it really stands out as just being like, why did you write that? Like, there's a line in it where Brittany Murphy is talking to Michael Biehn, her father, and she says, "Are you disappointed that I'm still a virgin?" And I'm like, has anybody ever said that in real life?
So yeah, this is right after he has, they've got three victims,
because the initial couple, and then there's the girl who gets attacked at her parents.
Right, yeah. Two of them are confirmed virgins. One is ambiguous, and based on that evidence, he decides that the serial killer is targeting virgins. It's such a leap.
But this is, again, one of the kind of film's strengths in terms of, like, it does have some interesting ideas. And kind of inverting the whole slasher trope of, like, sex equals death and abstinence equals, like, you live. That is an interesting idea. And I did like how I saw behind the scenes where the director from the time where the director said that, you know, they had created the first liberal psychopath, which I thought was quite fun.
That was good. I mean, I love this concept. I remember when this came out, and I was absolutely terrified of it because I'm a massive geek. I was an even more massive geek at the time, and I was like, "Oh fuck, if that was real, like I'd be dead."
Yeah, so.
But is that why he is choosing his victims though? Because he kills the principal and says, "Not a virgin or not virgin or whatever" on his forehead. So the rules don't really stand up.
Yeah.
Well, he killed the principal because, and as I mentioned at the top, there's spoilers. So Jay Moore's character killed the principal because he was part of the mother's rape, but he was picking the victims based on them being virgins. Because he explains in his big muhaha villain speech that it's like robbing the town of the only innocence it still has.
Right, right.
Okay. I think I zoned out at that point.
Yeah, it's when he's like, you know, sitting like putting his wig on and applying his makeup and stuff like that. I think like one of the other things I did notice about the movie, and one of the things that makes it weaker, is it does a lot of things where it doesn't make kind of direct reference to other movies, but it is clearly doing something that another movie did, and you keep thinking like, oh, that's a better movie. Like the bit in the basement is kind of part Silence of the Lambs, part Psycho. You know, there's just various... There's various bits and pieces of the movie. It's like we were talking earlier about the way it was edited. And in the start of the movie, with the kind of crime scenes, it does that thing where it's like it edits, intercuts quickly with crime scene photos, which has clearly been lifted from like Seven. And and I feel like there's constantly you're kind of reminded of better films.
I would say that's the thing for probably the entirety of the movie. I guess a teen orgy is probably a pretty novel idea, but other than that, it seems like you could probably go beat for beat. Like, again, like, I mean, Scream Ripoff is a pretty good name for this. Because all the school stuff, all of the student interactions, student stereotypes, as bizarrely cast as these kids, quote unquote kids are, it's a lot like I Know What You Did Last Summer, Scream, etc.
And I think like for target audience that this film is going for, like this film really isn't for us. I think for the kind of teen audience, I think it's totally serviceable. I was just looking at the IMDb scores breakdown by age, and the highest rated kind of demographic is the 18 to 29 crowd. So just
all right. Well, what's the IMDb score in that bracket? So overall, for the listeners, the IMDb score is 5.2, which is higher than the 4.8 score that Valentine got. So we could watch the better film. And I would say, having seen them both before, Valentine I saw a long time ago, but Cherry Falls is the slightly better film for sure. So nice. What was IMDb score in that age bracket though?
In that age bracket is 5.6, which granted is still not high, but is the highest out of all the demographics.
Goes that a couple of points higher.
Just
point, it's higher than anything four. My it's higher than anything my movie got.
I was wondering what you thought as well about in terms of like how it's directed. I think it's like directed in a kind of serviceable way, but I feel like it's Jeffrey Wright is maybe not a horror guy. Like it, the kills are kind of quite clunkily done, and the movie for all, you know, for all it's a kind of this murder mystery slasher horror movie is kind of curiously lacking in suspense and tension.
Yes. None of the chase scenes or sequences really did a whole lot for me. I thought the best of the bunch was when Brittany Murphy was looking for her newspaper friend, and that little sequence of discovering him was you know, was all right. But everything else, like chases through the school, certainly like the beginning two murders, there wasn't a lot to talk about. There isn't a lot to be said about them, I don't think.
What did you think about that one, aspect?
Like similarly, the only one I can remember off the top of my head is the one you referenced when she's chasing her newspaper pal. I can't remember the other ones. There's like I think the strongest moment of the film for me is when they push the chest down the stairs and she asks him what's in it. And then he's like, oh, it's your dad and maybe mine, like that. Like, I got Zodiac vibes of it. Although this was like way before Zodiac.
Yeah, before? About 7 years before.
But like beyond that, the whole thing just felt quite kind of director for hire. Like it certainly wasn't badly directed, but yeah, like not much stood out in this. There wasn't a whole lot of suspense for me anyway.
Did you, either of you, think that was odd? That the, you know, there wasn't like a kind of, maybe it's in a kind of overdone thing, but you know, there wasn't like a kind of penny drop moment in the movie. The killer just revealed himself.
I was kind of distracted by other things before things like that. I was trying to figure out like what's going on with what's going on here in terms of like the tone and you know, and Brittany Murphy's relationship with everybody. That was sort of what preoccupied me. And it's almost like all of the murder scenes was just like, let's get it over with. I want to see like what kind of bizarre scene she's going to have next, like quoting T.S. Eliot with her teacher and like asking if she can see him one-on-one some other time. And like, it's just strange.
It is very strange that, and like you say, it's almost like those scenes are more interesting. And like, you know, the character, I mean, she plays it in a way that is entirely watchable, that really drags you in. And yeah, it's almost more interesting than the actual kills themselves, which feel very, very generic.
It's weird because like usually when the non-horror stuff is like given a lot more attention, it makes the horror stronger because you care about the characters more. But I felt it felt kind of on both sides, even though more attention was given to the non-horror aspects, it didn't elevate any of the suspense for me.
Yeah, because none of the kills are memorable. Like, and well, the only interaction with the murderer that's like memorable is like when in the chemistry lab, Brittany Murphy's character Jodie throws a shark at the character, and that's amazing.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was good. Again, strange. You know, normally you would think that it would tie somewhat into the plot or just the theme of the movie of whatever this weird thing. And it's a biology lab. Like, it could have been anything. I don't know why they chose shark. Yeah, exactly.
That's a good point though. Like, yeah, it does all feel a bit haphazard and ill thought out. Just kind of, yeah.
It's like they showed up on set and that thing was already there. And they're like, okay, well, I guess we'll just use this.
But then it's also funny because there's like there's things that it feels like no thought's gone into, and then there's like fun little stuff like the fact that it's set in Virginia.
Apparently that caused that caused problems during the shoot. Like it was shot in Richmond, Virginia, and apparently there was some protest from kind of conservative parents at this horror movie being shot at this school that their kids were.
Oh, I bet they loved that.
So apparently it was quite a troubled production, you know, between the kind of the censor board, not, you know, like it was obviously a more censorious time because like it was directly after Columbine, and so it was, everybody was kind of on high alert, and there was anything that was set in a high school that was murderous in any way, it was obviously going to get in hot water at that time.
Yeah.
And then they had, like, during the shoot, like, yeah, protests against it. Like people writing in saying this is not right.
People have too much time in their hands.
I was going to ask.
I feel like this film is. Are you?
No. Go ahead, Graham. What were you going to? What was the point you were going to make there?
I was just going to say, I feel like this film is really ripe for a remake. I'm not usually like one to go for remakes, but I think this is like really rich subject matter, like, you know, pubescent sexuality. I think like there's a lot that you can dig into with this, and then like, you know, horror is so good at exploring kind of themes like that. I feel like something really intelligent and like affecting could be made from this concept.
It wasn't the topic I was going to ask about, but it is, you make an interesting point. I too also think that this could be remade in an interesting way, and one of the things about it, as well as having that kind of inversion of that, the subversion of that trope of, like, you know, killing virgins, also you know, viewing it with like 2020 glasses, it's very interesting in terms of its sexual politics. And even though it does not develop the ideas and it's a bit haphazard, this kind of idea of, like, you know, everybody just ignoring it because it's the weird kid and we can't derail the quarterback's career and his friend, you know, and all that, like, viewing it from this point, you know, post Me Too, like, that's, there's definitely a rich vein to be plowed there.
Totally. Yeah. Like, yeah,
for sure.
As well, just even things like,
nope, after you go first, Graham, and then Patrick after.
I was just gonna say, seeing things like, have you guys watched Big Mouth?
I've not.
No.
No, me neither.
Okay, well, it's an animated Netflix show, and it's all about puberty, basically, and it's just like watching it. It's just so painfully honest, and I've never seen a show tackle like issues like that. I mean, it's a comedy, so like it's a lot more easier to stomach than like a drama, but you know, it's just, these things aren't often tackled, and I think just rich ground.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, if you gave it to a director that actually cared about it or seemed to care about it, and it could have been a completely different movie, but again, for whatever reason, they just kept going back to these sort of cliched scenes that really was not, like, it was just too preoccupied with sort of hitting the beats that you would see in these sort of typical movies that, you know, you really don't, I mean, for as much as everyone and we are talking about, oh, it's, you know, the opposite of that trope, they don't spend too much time with it at all, and they don't really get into anything, you know, provoking or even really that provocative about it.
No, that's true. They develop some of these kind of smart ideas, but like you say, they don't really investigate them. And that's true of the kind of sexual politics stuff as well, of, you know, like when Brittany Murphy's having the conversation with her mother in the film, and the mother, like, says a kind of really disturbing line about, like, oh, I don't think it would have been prosecuted at the time, meaning the rape that happened that is connected to these murders.
Yes.
And I don't think it'd even be prosecuted now, as if this was some kind of weird defense. And
yeah,
you know, like, and it's true. I mean, that is the kind of reality of, like, it probably wouldn't have been prosecuted in the year 2000, but like they don't really dig underneath that and explore it and unpack it. They just leave it there.
Do you think that the movie ultimately shows the father as being a bad guy, or do you think that they apologize or like give him too many excuses of how he wasn't as bad as everyone else?
Yeah, I thought the ending was really strange. The way that they all just cover it up. I didn't know how I was supposed to feel. It seemed like the film was telling me, like, this is a happy ending, but it didn't feel very happy because the, you know, rapist walks free and the victim, albeit murderer, is killed.
Yeah, I think, again, tonally, that is, like, it leaves it on a weird note, that ending. I think you are kind of led to believe this is a happy ending, but there, I mean, then on the flip side of that, you could take the kind of the falls turning to blood, you know, turning blood red as like there's like a kind of permanent stain on the town, like, you know, it'll never have its innocence. It's always there, like the crime's there. I mean, like, on a kind of metaphorical level, but like, then maybe that's reading too far into it. I'm not sure.
I think that's a good reading, but it doesn't feel like it goes far enough for me. Like, it's kind of hard to miss. I didn't get that from that. I think it's a totally good reading, though. But yeah, it seemed like it was a happy ending.
For sure. I think to Patrick's point, yes, I do think that they give Michael Biehn's sheriff character too much rope of kind of like, oh, he was, he was coerced and it was... It was only kind of half rape, you know. You know what I mean? it's
and so
pretty disturbing.
The shot of how his friends get him to rape Jay Moore's mother is absolutely bizarre too. It's almost like they're swinging him into her.
Yes,
and it's just this one quick shot where it's like they show him to be completely. Completely faultless in it. He didn't do anything. He was on the ground. They picked him up and they literally threw him into her. It was just strange.
Yeah, I don't know why they.
But he also did say, "I knew what I was doing. I knew what I was doing."
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Again, like, it goes back to the film being muddled. You know, like, I mean, did he or didn't he? And I get that. You know, ambiguity is a strength sometimes, but not when it came to that.
And it's interesting because we've noted a few times, but both you, Patrick, and you, Graham, have kind of said, like, Jeffrey Wright feels like a director for our is kind of perfunctory, workman-like direction, and maybe didn't care about it. And yet, the weird thing about the movie is he cared about it enough to change the tone of the movie, or half change the tone of the movie, because apparently Ken Seldon's original screenplay leaned far more into the comedy satire element of it. Like, it was far more humorous. And Jeffrey Wright picked up the script and decided that he wanted to make a slightly grittier version of this. And he seems to have directed half the cast to do that. You know, Michael Biehn does seem like he's in another movie, like a more serious crime serial killer thriller. And there is these moments where it is kind of directed like that, like it is a kind of more serious serial killer thriller thing. And then you've got these moments of like extreme wackiness. And I feel like the bit of the movie, the run of the movie that I presume is most like the original screenplay is the last 20 minutes, where it's just like full on wackadoodle, like, you know, crazy slasher pick. And I was, you know, like, I suppose, like, what did you feel about that? It was just like the crazy, like, obviously it's one of the weaknesses, just the crazy kind of tonal shifts and how you both felt about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why why he would even sign on to do the movie in the first place. And I don't know what would be the grittier moments. Are they the cliched moments, do you think? And
yeah,
anything that was interesting was left in the script? So it's so strange that that the guy that did Romper Stomper would change the script to be just, you know, such a bland take on something that, like you guys are saying, it's like, even to this day, you could, it's so rich, and there's, and I love satire, and there's so much room for it. It's just, yeah, it seems like it was a real missed opportunity. It's mysterious to me why he made those choices.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I think bland as well is a total like key word for this film.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, like I say, it does have its defenders. And like I say, in terms of the guilty pleasure, it probably is kind of higher up the scale. In the first episode, I don't really believe in guilty pleasures in a way. You know, I'm not really ashamed of anything that I like, but my definition that I used in the first episode was kind of things that I find enjoyable, but I wouldn't rate any higher than 2 stars. And this is maybe, you could maybe make an argument for like 2.5, or if you're, you know, feeling really generous, you could maybe just about scrape a 3. Like you say, it's very kind of middle of the road. Just kind of there. And like you say, it's maybe not the kind of one for the bad movie night, apart from a couple of weird scenes, like the daddy moment and the, you know, toe-sucking stuff.
Yeah, they're too few and far between.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Like, it's not bad enough that you can... that you can sort of laugh at it and mock it, or even be intrigued by it. Like, for the most part, you're just going to get sort of your sort of generic slasher flick.
Yeah. And I wish it had picked a lane and been like, either we are going to make, like, we're going to fully explore the kind of topics we bring up, the kind of the whole virgin concept. And we're going to fully explore that. And we're going to fully explore this kind of terrible crime that's happened and the ripple effect of that terrible crime, or if they had just gone full on wacky and Jay Moore had been that character he is in the last 20 minutes for like basically the whole movie.
Yeah, I also like that they brought back, talk about cliche, the last shot before the end of the movie, she's looking down the laneway and sees Jay Moore in his drag outfit, and a bus passes by, and he's disappeared. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think, like, Jay Moore's performance in the last kind of 20 minutes or so, like, is pretty entertaining, I have to say.
Yeah, I feel bad for him, because I think he clearly thought that this was going to be something. And it ended up not being a whole lot of anything. And he, you know, he gave it 100%.
Yeah, I feel bad for, I think the 3 actors that we named, so Brittany Murphy, Jay Moore, and Michael Biehn, like, the 3 of them are doing really solid work. I love Michael Biehn. I wish he was in more stuff.
Yeah, no, Michael Biehn's great in this. Michael Biehn's just generally, I like him as a presence in movies, even though, like I said, I do feel that either he was directed in a certain way, or he just thought he was in a more serious movie than he actually was. Apparently, he took quite a lot of convincing by his agent to be in this movie. Apparently, Stephen Langford was going to be the original sheriff character. He'd previously worked with Brittany Murphy. Scheduling commitments, you know, clash of schedules meant that he couldn't do it. And then, yeah, I watched those short behind the scenes and Michael Biehn originally got the script and he was like, ah, another horror movie, blech. And but he got a bit of arm twisting by his agent and he ended up starring in the thing.
So then, yeah, I believe that. It seems like, even if he wasn't directed, I guess his read of the script was just, even in scenes where he's playing against the principal, it seems like he's just not in on whatever the tone of the movie is at all.
No, he's not bigging up the comedy. Like, and it is interesting. Like, there's, like I say, I watched this short behind the scenes, and you see the interviews with Brittany Murphy and Jay Mohr, and then Michael Biehn, and Michael Biehn seems to think it's more serious. Jay Mohr clearly thinks it's a comedy, and Brittany Murphy seems to think it's a mixture of both, and says, "Oh, I hope people can pick up on the comedy, as if it's oh so subtle." I thought it was quite entertaining. So I think we've pretty much covered the movie. What our kind of thoughts are on the movie. Obviously, it's not a great movie. As guilty pleasures go, it's not a terrible movie either. But before we head on out, do you have any kind of final thoughts that you want to give? I'll go to Patrick first, and then Greg.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of a star rating, I the movie annoyed me so much on its missed potential that I wouldn't recommend it to anybody, because it's just frustrating. And like you said, I mean, there are a couple of scenes here and there where you can be entertained by just the bizarre tone. But for the most part, I don't think I'll ever watch it again. I'm glad that I saw it. Like Graham saying, I mean, it'd be awesome if somebody remakes it and does a good job of it.
And Graham?
Yeah, kind of similar thoughts. Like, I didn't feel like this was a waste of time. I wasn't bored throughout it. And those are two things that I'm finding rarer and rarer. So, yeah, still though, I don't think I would recommend something to anyone.
Fair enough. I'm similar, you know. But again, entirely watchable. And if you want a kind of bog standard slasher for your night, then maybe this would be the one for you. But then that's all for this Guilty Pleasures episode. Before we head on out, I think, Graham, you wanted to say a few words about your movie, Death of a Logger, and its release.
Yeah, I just wanted to do an absolute shame-faced plug. Death of a Logger, paranormal horror film, will be out in the UK on the 6th of July in Sky Store, Amazon, and iTunes. And I would love if you would check it.
And Patrick, before we head on out, do you have any promotional plugs that you want to give?
No, I just want everybody to go check out Graham's movie too.
Oh, thanks, man. Excellent.
We're all on board that. Everybody, after you listen to this episode, head on out, check Graham's movie out. It's very good. We've seen
Watch
it.
Graham's before you watch Cherry Fall.
Yeah, we recommend Death of a Vulgar over Cherry Falls. I think that's for sure. Well, that just
thanks, guy.
Thank you very much, Graham. Thank you very much, Patrick, and thank you very much to all the listeners at home. Remember, the best way you can support New Horror Express is to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Spotify. Just that would be all good. And also, if you do give us a lovely review, at the end of this year-long project that we're doing with all these guilty pleasure movies, we're going to give away all 13 movies. That's going to be the grand prize at the end of this next June. And basically, the best review will win. So give us a lovely review, and then you can get a stack of Guilty Pleasure DVDs, some of which, like this one, you might not want, but like there'll be some real corkers in there as well for your great bad movie nights. So get that done, and we will see you next time.